Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I am your host, Jordan McNamara. We're doing a dive into the Julio Jones trade reaction. So he sent for a second and basically a pick swap in a couple of years from Atlanta to Tennessee, largely thought of as being a salary cap dump in terms of Atlanta, you know, kind of needing to restructure their roster to comply with the salary cap stuff. You know, they probably could have restructured him in a different way, but ultimately they move on. And you know, I actually wrote in a Football Guys article that wasn't published yet that I suspect that you know, I put Tennessee as the favorite in the you know, that they should be the favorite for Julio. And I think that it's, you know, that he signs there is really good news for them as a team. I think there's a lot of different takeaways from this. So let's just sort of run down a little bit on both angles. I think from the Atlanta angle, if this causes a drop in Matt Ryan's price, I'm interested. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this from a number of different ways. You know, Matt Ryan's at quarterback 21. He's 609 in the last 30 days. And that's a pretty appealing price. If you just for a second just go back and say, hey, who's the better quarterback? Just pure quarterback. Is it Ryan Tannehill or is it Matt Ryan? We could maybe debate that, which I think is kind of the point. You know, I think you can make a pretty good argument that it's probably Ryan, that it's Matt Ryan. But it's at least I think it's not a clear runaway on the other side of that, right? I don't think that Ryan Tannehill is clearly better. And when you say, okay, like let's go back a second here and sort of rethink, you know, what Ryan Tannehill was dealing with Tennessee, run first offense, almost to the extreme. It was, you know, AJ Brown centric. You know, Corey Davis was nice on an efficiency perspective, but I don't think was a true game changer elevator at the position. And they had Jonnu Smith, who largely underperformed. Like he was no, I don't think he's any maven or anything like that. And ultimately, I mean, you saw what Ryan Tannehill did in terms of some really good, strong quarterback one production. And if that's kind of what this Arthur Smith type scenario, this Arthur Smith type system can produce, I think that's a really interesting and good opportunity for Matt Ryan. And I think that, you know, when you sort of look at when you look at the situation now, you sort of juxtapose Atlanta in 2021 versus what Tennessee was the past 2 years. I mean, you got a better pass catcher at running back. You've got, I think, probably better weapons at tight end than you had in Tennessee. And you've got a wide receiver one who, you know, we could maybe debate about that a little bit in terms of, you know, who's an overall better player. Is it AJ Brown? Is it Calvin Ridley? Again, I think that one's debatable. All of a sudden you sort of look at that and you're like, I don't see how this situation's terribly worse than what Arthur Smith was dealing with, and we've seen what Tannehill can put up. So if this actually drops his price, if this drops Matt Ryan's price, I'm not terribly, terribly concerned with that. And honestly, I think it becomes a buy situation. You know, I was thinking two-way go stuff. Can you get, you know, Matt Ryan and a first for Baker Mayfield? Right? Could you sort of do a deal like that? Because that one's really interesting. You know, that would be something that I'm not sure that's out there, right? But that would sort of be the type of pivot that I would try and make. I think it's a really interesting two-way go because I think you might outproduce the pick, and then you're going to outproduce Mayfield with Ryan, and you're also at the same time going to get a better pick. So I think that's an interesting way to go about it, and sort of in that pivot, because I don't think that over the next couple of years that some of the quarterbacks that are going ahead of them have clear, better production profiles than Matt Ryan does. So I think the big, you know, one of the things that really jumped out to me as I was reviewing in preparation for this show was when you look at that Calvin Ridley, he led the NFL last year in the percent of air yards that he had, which totally jumped off the page to me. It was something that was very surprising when I was sort of diving in and looking at it. You know, that's, to me, that's a very interesting and notable stat. Those stats really speak to me in terms of that is something. It's tends to be predictive in terms of it tends to show, you know, offenses that sort of run through a specific player tend to keep running through those players, right? The guys that are able to generate 35%+ of air yards, like that is a good indication, a good sign for what they have to offer. Another guy up there, 39.6, DJ Moore. So a couple of guys that sort of jumped off the page in that stat review. I think it's really good news. Calvin Ridley is a super high floor player, I think, is probably the takeaway. You know, and if Next Gen Stats had him for $143 in terms of targets, could that go up? It's going to go up, I think, because of the 17 games, obviously. But could it go, you know, could he push, you know, up towards, you know, $160, something like that? I think that's probably in his range of outcomes. I think the rest of the field in Atlanta, I think when you sort of look at, I think Mike Davis is an interesting one in terms of where does this pass game funnel? Is it potentially Hayden Hurst is a name that I think is pretty interesting from a two tight end perspective. I think he could be a beneficiary of the Julio trade. And, you know, no one's talking about him or thinking about him, but in terms of established pass catchers, he's the second best one there right now. Yeah, you know, I guess him and Mike Davis would be the post Calvin Ridley established pass catchers. You've got Russell Gage, Olamide Zaccheaus is another one. I think Frank Darby is a guy that's getting kicked around as well. I mean, for me, I think it's probably good news for Mike Davis's potential passing volume. Again, I think the tight ends, you might see a little bit more early development out of Pitts in terms of maybe forcing it into him. I don't think this is going to hurt his, you know, push to meteoric heights in terms of his dynasty valuation. But I think Hayden Hurst is a name that, you know, could potentially be a beneficiary of this. And also, in, you know, as we're thinking kind of let's play the long game a little bit, if you're the longest view in your league, you know, if this potentially opens up an opportunity for him to be heading into a free agent year, you know, is he on the Jonnu Smith track after this year, or is he more of a Gerald Everett type? Well, he's got, I think, the ability to, you know, get in some two tight end action and see plenty of opportunity this year. So I would point to that as being one thing I think we could potentially, you know, take advantage of. And also, there is reason to suggest as well when you sort of look at it. Last year, coming from Tennessee, you saw Arthur Smith run out 1.23 tight ends per play, right? It was per route, you know, per pass, there was 1.23 tight end routes run. And then when you compare that to Atlanta, they were essentially right at one. So that's on the higher arc of the position. The Tennessee numbers, top five or so in the league. Could you see that potentially push even more? And you got to remember, Arthur Smith, former tight end coach, has shown a proclivity to sort of funnel a little bit towards the a little bit more towards the position. 25% of the targets per dropback were. Tennessee was targeted on 25. Tennessee's tight ends were targeted on 25% of dropbacks. So, I think that's an interesting, you know, it's an interesting pivot. When you look at Atlanta, that was 15%. So, I think there's room for both more opportunity at the tight end position and maybe more of a focus on plays that go towards them. I think that's a really interesting opportunity for Hayden Hurst there. You know, could you see 1.3, 1.4, 1.5 in terms of, you know, tight end routes per drop back? I think that's absolutely possible, and that could definitely be a Hayden Hurst sneaky value type situation, particularly in the, you know, as the Kyle Pitts train goes up, Let's think of other ways that some value gets hidden in that. I think Hurst has outs too, you know, from a production perspective this year, from he could be a 2022 free agent type uptick guy. I think that's very possible as well. So he's one that I'm pretty interested in, and we'll see what the fallout is. He's 32.5 in the last 30 days. I mean, you can look and see he's got plenty of opportunity to outproduce guys like Dawson Knox, and heck, Gerald Everett is a guy I like quite a bit above him as well. I don't think that there should be that big of a gap between those two. For example, I think Hurst should probably go ahead of Everett. So that's a big thing there. Again, then you sort of look a little bit more towards, you know, the running back situation. Does Mike Davis, is he a beneficiary of this? They're pretty light in terms of some of their depth. You've got, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson as a backup to Mike Davis. You've got, you know, Gage and Olamide Zaccheaus and Darby as basically the other guys in the receiving core there. It's a pretty fragile build, would be the thing that I would say. So I think you get a potential chance for these guys to really be to be kind of a pass funnel situation, because it doesn't really look like there's a lot in the offense that's going to take opportunity. So I would really look for top four being Ridley, Pitts, Hurst, and Mike Davis getting a pretty substantial chunk. And then I don't really think we're going to be rostering many other wide receivers or anything like that. I don't have a good take on anyone past that. I think for Tennessee, it's going to be interesting. You know, Football Guys has Ryan Tannehill essentially almost on the number of what he was last year in terms of passing attempts per game. I don't know how I feel about that one. Every inclination is it should be more. You're getting a change in offensive coordinators, right? I don't know what that tendency will be. But you have a better, I think you have a better wide receiving core in terms of, at least I do think Julio Jones is an uptick over Corey Davis for sure. And, you know, I think it's an interesting watch in terms of what they do in terms of volume. Are they going to really go away from Derrick Henry, excuse me? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, could you see, you know, in the event of, let's say it's Derrick Henry injury, in the event that that happens, could this take a little bit more passing game shift? You know, that would be something I think we would have to monitor too, because I think they have weapons and they have the ability to do that in maybe ways that they didn't before. I think one of the big winners in this situation too is actually Anthony Firkser as someone in the GroupMe chat put it, fourth dimensional chess type reasons. I thought that they were absolutely in the competition, in the running for a post June 1 transaction for their receiving core, whether that was at wide receiver, whether that was at tight end. Both of those two would have made sense. Specifically, Zach Ertz would have made sense. You know, if they were in the trade candidacy of someone like Evan Ingram, maybe, or David Joku, if those guys are available, you know, those would be potential scenarios where I could see, hey, you know, maybe a move's made. I think now you sort of look at it, and yeah, there might be some restructuring that goes on with, you know, with Ryan or Tannehill and with Julio Jones that can help them. But they're almost in a situation where you don't have a ton more cards to play in terms of capital, in terms of salary cap room to make someone else fit. So I know that they're going to have to restructure. They're probably going to have to restructure Tannehill in some way to sort of make this all work, and structure Julio was the other thing that I had heard today too, that they might be in a position to do. But ultimately, I think you're probably kind of stuck a little bit in terms of second options, right? In terms of how do you sort of go out and address the tight end position. I think you're limited with that right now. And so I think it's great news for Anthony Firkser because, you know, maybe it takes away some of the, you know, is 120 targets in his range of outcomes. Well, was it really ever anyways? I'm not sure it ever was. But I was thinking 80, 90 targets, something. I think that's firmly possible. You look at a guy that on a per route run efficiency perspective has been pretty good. And, you know, you get 6 targets a game out of that. Like, that would be pretty good, and it'd be pushing, you know, up at about 100 targets. And I think, you know, is that, are we expecting that? Well, if we had 5.5, between 5 and 6, I think that'd be pretty useful, pretty lucrative. That's top 12 tight end type production. And I don't think that's asking too much from a guy that's been pretty efficient. This isn't a scenario where you're trying to shoehorn in Ian Thomas into a gap in the offense where he hasn't really been that effective. Firkser has limitations, but has been pretty effective. So that's the thing with him that I think can be pretty nice. Again, he's out there on waiver wires for waiver wires that haven't run. He's been available in spots. So yeah, I'm not backing away. Yeah, does it take off some of the ceiling? Yeah. But was he ever really tight end, you know, 4 or 5 ceiling? No, not really. The bet we were more making was, you know, somewhere between 9 and 15. That was more the bet that we were making. And I don't think that has significantly altered his arc. In fact, it's probably protected his floor. So I think you will get, assuming he's healthy, you will get viable production out of him on a tight end 2, tight end 1 type fringe. I feel pretty confident in that at this point. So that's really the angle with him. Again, you don't have to worry about a ton of volume at the running back position either. So, and then outside of A.J. Brown and Julio, they have a ton of great options, right? They've got Josh Reynolds. They've, you know, they sort of have gone thrift shopping, I guess, and it's the outside of A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. And I think when you sort of look at that, you could say, all right, like, that's a really compelling, you got a good quarterback. You're sort of putting a tight end in a tight end 3 position, or in a third weapon type situation without a clear cut 4th guy. That's a scenario where you could see, you know, a pretty good chunk of targets at the tight end position, and from his cost, be pretty nice. So we'll see how his cost moves here over the next, you know, couple weeks or so after the dust settles on some of this. But yeah, that's the big takeaways. And I think that Firkser is a winner in this. Even, you know, it's a little counterintuitive on how he comes to that, but I do think he's a winner. You know, he's the fallout from this is that he's a winner. I actually think Hayden Hurst is a winner too. So I know that the attention will be elsewhere, but those are two deeper plays at tight end that I think are warrant some exploration. All right, well, that'll do it for this episode. You know, it's post June 1, so we're going to hopefully get some more moves here. It'll be interesting as the cap moves around. Maybe we're waiting on a Rodgers deal. I don't think it's going to happen, but yeah, that could be one of the next big shoes to drop. So until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.